I had a note. I get lots of notes during the week. But I received a note this last week, and I thought it was a very good question, and started writing, and it took me all day to write the answer to this one note. It's from a lady knows named Margaret. She says, "Hello, I'm a 21-year-old girl from Iceland, and I found this site by accident as I was looking for answers on the internet about contraception. I found the answer here and want to thank you for a good explanation. I have a boyfriend and we're having sex without being married. I want to ask, why do you say that it is a sin? We love each other and we only have sex with each other, so we are not infecting each other with STDs. Isn't what we feel for each other what matters? Marriage is only a ritual performed by humans. God knows we love each other. Isn't that enough?" And I found this question interesting because even though her concepts are not biblically correct, still it was kind of refreshing to have someone actually ask. I get all sorts of notes about people pounding me over the head saying, "You're wrong." She actually asked. And she asked in a polite way. And it's our duty as Christians to answer questions as best we can. In 1 Peter chapter 3, and in verse 15, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." We need to always be ready. And even sometimes on the difficult questions or the ones that are maybe embarrassing, we ought to be able to give a good answer to it. And the question basically is, why is it that having sex without being married, why is that called a sin? And that falsehood that's basically in our society is quite prevalent. There are a lot of people that nowadays think it's all right. We talked about in the past how quickly it's gone. From about 1960 to about just somewhere about 1990, in that 35-year span, the number of people living together has multiplied 10 times. There's been a 1,000% increase. It's gone up to over 1,200% increase, the last statistic I know, and that's still several years out of date. There are a lot of people living together without being married. And people are now questioning, why did God call that a sin? Those answers that we give need to come from the Scriptures because God needs to get the proper credit. Again in 1 Peter, this time in chapter 4, and in verse 11, "Whoever speaks, let him speak as it were the utterances of God. Whoever serves, let him do so as by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen." One of the prevalent falsehoods that are in our society that leads to people questioning things like this is that people see truth as relative. Your truth may not necessarily be my truth. In fact, when I wrote to this woman, she actually wrote back to me. I read through it this afternoon. That was one of the things I did. And she admits, yeah, that's true. From her point of view, what she sees as truth and what I see as truth, that might be two different things. Because all that's important to her is what she thinks is truth. And by placing my decisions as being truth, then people give themselves permission to determine what's right or wrong for themselves. And then, of course, whatever they decide must be right. And they go up and do whatever they feel like doing. But just imagine if everyone told the government that what I feel like doing is right, regardless of what you say. Especially after last month. How many people feel like paying their taxes? Can you imagine going up to the government and saying, "Well, I don't feel like doing that. And your truth may not be my truth." No, well, we have a word for that. We call that anarchy. When everybody does what they feel like doing. And we know, most people know, that when you have an anarchy as a society, it doesn't work. It's mass chaos, pure chaos. There has to be a source for truth, a fixed source. There has to be a standard which we can appeal to. In John chapter 17 and verse 17, John 17 and verse 17, sanctify them in the truth, thy word is truth. We have a standard, we have a fixed standard, and it's called the Bible. A Bible that came from God is what is claimed. God did not leave us to fend for ourselves. He gave us instructions on how to live properly. And they're not arbitrary laws. They're not things where God says, well, hey, I just want to make your life miserable. I'm going to rule this out. Not things like that in there. God's laws are carefully designed to keep us safe. Take a look in Deuteronomy. When God was explaining laws to the Israelites, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, and in verse 24, Deuteronomy chapter 6, and in verse 24, So the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, and for our survival as it is today. Why did God give laws to Israelites? God said it's because it was for their good in the long term, always, and so that they might survive. That's the key to a lot of God's laws. They're not arbitrary. They're there actually because it makes life better. And we need to understand that. So one of the questions that we can look at is, why is fornication, which is the word for having sex outside marriage, why is fornication a sin? We need to understand ancient Israel had a problem following God's teaching. God gave laws for their good, right? But those very teachings were there to keep them from harm. But one of the problems they had is they kept changing God's laws. In Isaiah chapter 5, and in verse 20, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. And therein lies the problem. A lot of people think they're wise. A lot of people think they're clever. And they think that we can modify what God said and come up with something better. That we can change it in some way and somehow make it a better law. For instance, would you just give you an example on the scale of things. Would you accept an argument from your two-year-old that touching a hot pot on the stove might not be such a bad thing after all? So we understand the consequences. We know what will happen down the road. God knows the future. God knows the consequences of certain behaviors. And He made laws that protect us, ourselves from ourselves. And yet somehow we think, hey, we fix these laws and change them a little bit, that somehow we're going to stay more safe or better, have a better life than what God had laid out. That doesn't make sense. See, fornication is a sin, one way to put it is, because God said so. As simple as that. Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews 13 and verse 4. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. God said these things are wrong. Having sex outside marriage is wrong. He's going to judge those things. And perhaps we might have to make sure we understand the terms. Because what do we mean by sin? We throw that term around, and a lot of people don't like to use it these days. You know, they don't want to call things sin anymore. But what do we mean by sin? Sin just means breaking a law. It means acting as if there is no law. Being able to go beyond the boundaries of the law. In 1 John chapter 3, and in verse 4, 1 John 3, verse 4, everyone who practices sin also practices lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. There is what we're saying. When we say that something is a sin, we're saying it breaks a law. Simple as that. God has a law saying fornication is a sin, that fornication is wrong. When somebody does it that breaks the law, that's sin. And fornication, just to make sure everybody's clear, it's an older English word. We don't use it all that much anymore. But it just simply means sex outside of marriage. Let's look at some of the other passages of what God says about fornication. Take a look at 1 Corinthians 6. See, in 1 Corinthians 6, God says fornication, among other sins, is unrighteousness. 1 Corinthians 6, in verse 9. Or do you not know that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither fornicators, nor adulterers, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers shall inherit the kingdom of God. Here it is, very plain and simple. It's unrighteous. It's not good. It's not right. It's also called outright a sin in 1 Corinthians 12 and in verse 20. 1 Corinthians 12. Oh, 2 Corinthians, sorry. 2 Corinthians 12. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 20. For I'm afraid that perhaps when I come I may find you to be not what I wish, and may be found by you to be not what you wish. That perhaps there may be strife, jealousy, angry tempers, disputes, slanders, gossip, arrogance, disturbances. I'm afraid that when I come again, my God may humiliate me before you, and I mourn over those who have sinned in the past and not have repented of impurity and immorality, or some of your translations says fornication, and sensuality, which they have practiced. Those who have sinned, and he lists out, impurity, immorality, and sensuality. And immorality is just the word for fornication. It's a sin. It's a work of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5, verse 19. Galatians 5, verse 19. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality or fornication, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousies, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envyings, drunkenness, carousing, and these things of which I have forewarned you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. So it's a work of the flesh. And is not to be associated with Christians. In Ephesians 5, and verse 3, but do not let immorality, that's the word for fornication, or any impurity or greed be even named among you as saints, as is proper among the saints. It's not supposed to be associated with Christians. You can't be a Christian and be doing these things at the same time. And in Colossians 3, starting with verse 5, it's called disobedience. Colossians 3, verse 5, therefore consider the members of your earthly body dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is on account of these things the wrath of God will come. And in them you also walk when you are living in them. These are things that God's wrath will come upon the sons of disobedience, depending on your translation there. So the clear answer to the question is, Why is it a sin? Because God called it that. But of course, when a person asks a question like that, they're not looking just for that simple of an answer. They want to know why God said it's wrong. And that's where I end up spending a lot of time trying to go through it in a different manner. Because I had a feeling that this person did not really believe in the Bible. She confirmed that when she wrote back today. But she thought it was just a man-made document. So I wanted to try to approach it from a standpoint that somebody even from the world might get it through the thick skull if they wanted to be stubborn about it. There's a reason behind the reason why God said, don't do this. Well, first off, people tend to forget. Everyone wants to think about the fact they're going to heaven. But they keep forgetting that there's a gate. There's a judgment before you get into heaven. And who decides who gets to go into heaven? Well, it's God. There's a judgment that we all have to face. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and in verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. We must face God in judgment. And we're going to give an account for everything that we've done. And that basically means we're going to have to give account whether we followed what God said. God's going to ask us. And we're not in a position to tell God what he will accept. But people like act that way. In Isaiah chapter 29... Isaiah 29 and in verse 16, you turn things around. Shall the potter be considered as equal to the clay? That what is made should say to his maker, he did not make me? Or what is formed say to him who formed it? He has no understanding. And think about how many people do that to God. You really didn't understand the times when you made this law. And things have changed today. God's the one who made us. Isn't that the lie that teenagers give their parents? You don't understand. Times have changed. I got that lie not too long ago. Not from my teenagers, but from another teenager. Things are different today. No, they're not. Got different technology. But things aren't any different. Is that the line we're going to give to God? Tell God he didn't understand us? And then after doing as they please, people think that God will welcome them into heaven with open arms? Yes, God is love. But the Bible tells us God is also just. In Romans chapter 11. Romans chapter 11 and verse 22. Behold then the kindness and severity of God to those who fell, severity. But to you God's kindness, if you continue in his kindness. Otherwise you also will be cut off. And I'm still trying to figure out if people think they can go up to God in heaven and expect God to say, oh, those laws I gave you, oh, you didn't have to follow those. Do you think that would be just? Well, God says he's a God of love, but he's also a God of justice. And we will be judged by what we do. In Romans chapter 2, starting with verse 5, but because of your stubbornness and unrepentant heart, you are storing up wrath for yourself in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to every man according to his deeds. To those who by perseverance in doing good seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. But to those who are selfishly ambitious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, wrath, and indignation. There will be tribulation and distress for every soul who does evil, of the Jew first and also of the Greek, but glory and honor and peace to every man who does good, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, for there is no partiality with God. God's not partial. He has set off laws. He expects us to follow them. So one of the reasons why God says fornication is a sin is because doing so, it will keep you out of heaven. But there's other reasons as well. You see, sex without marriage bond cheapens the relationship into something that's basically animalistic. When people cease to strive for better, they basically turn into animals. They act like animals. In speaking about false teachers in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 12, but these, like unreasoning animals, born as creatures of instinct to be captured and killed, reviling where they have no knowledge, and then will in the destruction of those creatures also be destroyed. This is the way people end up acting when they reject God, when they follow their instincts. They become like animals. Notice the warning that they will speak evil of things they don't understand. And I notice this because the writer of that note, Margaret, said that marriage is only a ritual performed by humans. She doesn't understand marriage. Now, I could turn around and say, well, sex is only an act that's performed by two animals. Two hedgehogs could do the same thing. But marriage isn't something you find in the animal kingdom. Not, they have some animals have rituals in which they go to and mate for life. But marriage, according to the Bible, isn't done just by men. Take a look at Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. Starting with verse 3. And some Pharisees came to him, testing him, and saying, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause at all? And he answering said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Consequently, there are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. What makes a marriage? God. Yes, it is an act that's performed before people. And people are involved in it. But it's God who does the joining. How? Well, see, marriage is a covenant. Take a look at Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 14. Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. There's a covenant involved. Covenant is kind of like a contract, but it's much more than a contract. There are vows involved, and hidden in our traditions regarding marriage are the acts of a covenant. Part of a covenant is terms of agreement. Do you take this woman for better or for worse, in sickness and health? What are those? Those are terms of agreements. There's a vow being made saying, hey, we're going to agree and abide by these terms. When you have a covenant, you need somebody to witness that the covenant exists. We call them bridesmaids and groomsmen. And the best man and the bridesmaid signed their on the license to say they witnessed that this marriage took place. And all the people in the audience are witnesses too. That's why they're there, to witness the fact that a covenant had been made between two people. There's also in the covenant in the Old Testament, and we find it oftentimes, to have a covenant, you also need a physical witness, something that serves as a reminder that the covenant exists. We call it a ring that you carry it around with you. It's there to remind you that the covenant exists. And covenants, by the way, when they got all done, you sat down with a feast with everybody to show that you were in fellowship with one another. We call that a reception. See, all the parts of a covenant are there. And it's all done before God. And Malachi tells us God is witness of this covenant. But we somehow call it unimportant. Sex outside marriage basically says it degrades marriage. It cheapens it. It cheapens sex, it cheapens marriage. It's no longer something special. But another thing that a lot of people don't understand is that when people decide to have sex outside of marriage, the emphasis is on the sex, the sensual feelings. In fact, you can see that in this woman's note. Isn't what we feel for each other what matters? That's what she had said. Now, if you look in surveys and people today, people are realizing there's a problem here. Gary Chapman, my wife had us listen to a CD just a couple weekends ago. His book called The Five Love Languages. And one of their things I remember from that, it says the average sensual relationship lasts about 2 years. According to Bumpus and Lou in 1998, in a survey, the title Cohabiting Couples Survey, the median duration of a cohabitation is 1.3 years. Van Gothen in 2005 concluded that the average length of a cohabiting relationship that does not lead to marriage is 12 to 18 months. They're all saying the same thing. There's a problem here. It doesn't last when people have sex outside of marriage. The problem is, it's based on feelings, and feelings are unstable. They don't last. Thus, a relationship built on sensual feelings will not last unless those feelings are replaced by something stable. Just to give you an idea, how many unmarried couples can you name that you know have been together for 50 years? I don't know any. How many can you name, though, of married couples? I know several. My parents are one. There's a couple back here that's been married for 50 years. There you know another one. I got some really close friends out in Kentucky that have been married for well over 50 years. I know a lot of people that have been married over 50 years. I can't think of anybody who hasn't been married who's stayed together for 50 years. Let's chop it in half. How about 25 years? I know a lot of people who have been married 25 years. My wife and I being one of them. But I know oodles of people. I would have a hard time sitting down and listing them all. They've been married that long. Oh, do you think that maybe the couples that got married, they just happened to be blessed and with less problems? I think the people that have been married would tell you that. No, that's not true. Not even close. They'll be the first to tell you they've had their share of problems. Besides, why is it only the married who last and not the unmarried? According to Bluntus in Sweden, 1989, long-term cohabiting relationships in a marriage in America are far rarer than successful marriages. And this will emphasize far rarer. It's because of the commitment married couples have to make in their relationship. They made a commitment, a covenant to each other. It keeps them together long enough that for the most part, they work out the problems. It helps them get through some of the rough times, so they hold together long enough to work the problems out. Those who have been married or have not been married don't realize what they're missing in their relationship because they never had it. It's easy to be together when nothing's going wrong. After all, this young lady is only 21. I doubt she's been with this boyfriend very long. And it's easy when nothing's particularly going wrong at the moment, and you're focused on your senses, to think, well, nothing's ever going to go wrong. And eventually reality intrudes itself on the relationship. Because feelings are so important in these relationships, they tend to fade when reality hits. Or they get distracted because of problems. And so the couple then tries to recreate the titillating feelings that were early on in the relationship, and it doesn't seem to work. Because part of the reason they had those titillating feelings is because of the newness of the relationship, and now it's old. How do you recreate something that in part was exciting because it was new? And when they fail in part to recreate those feelings, they go looking for those sensual feelings elsewhere. And, oh, there's some exciting sensual feelings with somebody else. Why is that? Well, it's new again. Well, I must have fallen out of love with that other person, and I'm in love with this one now for real. That's why people who are unmarried bounce from partner to partner to partner to partner, and why it doesn't last. Again, Bumpus in 1994 stated that within the first 2 years, approximately 29% of cohabiting couples separate, compared to only 9% of married couples. That's quite a contrast. Cohabiting couples have a rate of separation that is 5 times that of married couples. And in the event of separation, cohabitors have a rate of reconciliation that's only 1/3 as high as married couples. Married couples, at least for the most part, try to put it back together. Only 1/3 of unmarried couples even try, compared to the married couples. Contrast this to what we find about married love in Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon, chapter 8. This is the way it's supposed to be in marriage. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, starting with verse 6. Put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death, and jealousy as severe as Sheol. Its flashes are the flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly despised. You can't stop real love. You can't stop married love. That's the attitude. But contrast that to unmarried sex. Here's one statement in Proverbs chapter 5. Talking about the immoral woman. In Proverbs 5 verse 6, she does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable, and she does not know it. That is the problem. When people build relationships on feelings, it's unstable. And they don't know it. Well, there's another problem. And Paul warns about this in regards to prostitution, but we can generalize it. The problem is it prevents true love from developing. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, starting with verse 15. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take away the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? May it never be. Or do you not know that the one who joins himself to a harlot is one body with her? For he says the two will become one flesh. But the one who joins himself to the Lord is one spirit with him. Flee sexual immorality. Every other sin that a man commits is outside the body, but the immoral man sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, from whom you have from God, and that you're not your own? For you've been bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. What Paul is saying is that sex creates a bond between man and woman. But when that bond is formed in an unstable relationship like prostitution, outside of marriage, it damages the person's ability to form and keep relationships. In fact, men have noticed this. According to Seltzer in 2000, within 5 years of the beginning of a cohabiting relationship, more than half of those relationships will end if the couple had been married during, even if the couple had been married during that time. If somebody starts out with living together outside of marriage, having sex outside of marriage, there's within 5 years, half of those relationships will end, even if they do get married. Higher than the divorce rate. Another one, the risk of divorce after living together is 40 to 85% higher than the risk of divorce after not living together. In other words, those who live together before marriage are almost twice as likely to divorce as those who have not lived together before marriage. And by the way, that one is in Bumpus and Sweet's 1995 survey, Hall and Zeal's 1995 survey, Brockers, Stantel, Morgan and Russell's 1993 survey, the Morris and Rail's 1992 survey, and Glenn's survey in 1990. There's five different ones that came to exactly the same conclusion. Why is it? See, sex without marriage damages a person's ability to truly love, to form a relationship. Because what ends up happening is you form a relationship with bond with somebody, and that because it's unstable, it breaks. And what happens when it breaks? Anybody remember their first crush on somebody? You still remember it, because it hurt when it broke. You add sex into that mix, and it really hurts. People feel, that's why it gets large suicide rates among teenagers sometimes. It really hurts. But they go and find somebody else to ease the hurt. But of course that breaks up. And that hurts too, but not quite as bad as the first one. And you find somebody else, and then it ends up breaking up, and that hurts. And somebody else, and that hurts. And after a while, you get to the point where you're saying, hey, I'm just going to put a wall here between me and that other person, because it hurts every time we break up, and I know it's bound to break up anyway, so... And guess what happens? You start, whenever you're having a relationship with somebody, you put a wall there. Because you know that person's going to hurt your feelings. And that's what Paul was talking about. Even though we're talking, he was talking about men having relationships with harlots. He starts talking about it interferes with your relationship with Christ. Because you start treating everybody as if they're out to get you. And they're going to hurt you eventually, so I'm going to keep a barrier between me and you. And then true love can't form. Oh, well, people call sexual feelings and sexual acts love. But in marriage, those are just the byproducts of real love. Sex alone is too shallow to be called love. Take a look at 1 Corinthians 13. Here's a description of love. Love is patient, love is kind, and is not jealous. Love does not brag, is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. I get kids all the time asking me, do you think I'm in love? Here's a list of things. Let's check this against this list. What do you think? Well over half the time. You don't get through half those questions before. That doesn't describe our relationship. And the answer is, no, you're not in love. You might be infatuated, but you're not in love. But notice, there's not a mention of any butterflies in the stomach. There's no sensual feelings. There's no sex. That's not love. When people focus on physical feelings and physical acts, they don't spend the time they need to create the deeper, lasting bond that forms marriages and other relationships. You want to be blunt about it, you can get sex anywhere. But it's hard to find somebody who's willing to commit their lives to you. And because of the shallow nature of sensual relationships, people break up frequently. They form new relationships that don't last. And after a while, they become callous. Because they know it's not going to last. Why is fornication wrong? Because it's selfish. You see that when people are describing it. They always talk about what they want. You wonder what the other person wants. Sex without marriage is a selfish act. Because people want the benefits of marriage without the responsibility. Kind of way most teenagers want to live their lives too. It demonstrates immaturity. In fact, this woman showed it. She originally found the site wanting to find some way to have sex without producing children. She was looking for a way to have her fun without responsibility. I suspect she realized she's not responsible enough to have children. That's why she doesn't want them. And I don't think she can count on her boyfriend to be there for the next 20 years to help raise the children, so she doesn't want any. She might not want to really willingly verbalize that, but I think deep down she knows that. But children are the natural consequence of sex. Married couples, they'll do things to you, use contraceptives or something like that to control the spacing and number of children. Because you know what? If a child unexpectedly comes along, you know what they call that? A blessing. Take a look at Psalm 127, verse 3. Which is why, Bruce, I knew that verse this morning. Psalm 127, verse 3. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. What do unmarried couples call when a child is suddenly on the speculatively develops. And oops, a disaster in the making. And don't look at it as a blessing. Why is that? Because they're doing it selfishly. Couples who have sex without being married are strongly motivated by self-gratification. It's a relationship of convenience. They have less tolerance for unhappiness. They won't put up with any difficulties, especially not when there's no consequences to leaving. That's one of the things unmarried couples just don't understand. See, when something gets hard, what happens with an unmarried couple? One guy walks out the door. Why? Because there's nothing stopping him from going out the door. There's no bond. There's no commitment. There's no agreement. Oh, you might have said, oh, I'm going to be here forever. Those are just words, and they just walk right out. In a marriage, at least, there is an agreement, there is a bond, and yes, people try to walk out of marriage, but they end up spending years trying to get it all worked out. There is an incentive not to leave. But like I said, it's a selfish act when people have sex outside of marriage. Because they don't want the responsibility. And so they want to be able to just walk right out the door when things go rough. And this is the one that's probably strangest of all, that people can't get through their heads. It seems absolutely strange that something as motivated by pleasure results in unhappiness. But that's what happens. Do you think couples that break up all the time are happy that they got to break up? Take a look at Proverbs 5. Go back to that immoral woman. And let's go back to a verse before. Proverbs 5, verse 4. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. In the end, it starts out looking like it's going to be fun. But in the end, in the long run, is bitterness. Remember what we started out with, just saying that God puts laws in there to protect us. See, sex is supposed to be fun. God made it that way. It's not fun when it's outside marriage. Not when the end result is unhappiness and bitterness. When people get hurt, their feelings hurt. In fact, people understand that. Here's some quotes that men have said. Cohabiting couples report lower levels of happiness, lower levels of sexual exclusivity, hard word to say, and sexual satisfaction, and poor relationships with their parents, which is a strange one to throw in with the rest of it. People who have sex outside of marriage have lower levels of happiness, lower levels of being only with one partner, and lower levels of sexual satisfaction. Wait a minute, isn't that what they started, that's why they're doing it? It doesn't work. Because part of what makes sex fun is knowing that your partner is yours. And that you're committed to one another. But see, people don't have it, don't realize what they're missing. The annual rates of depression among cohabiting couples are more than 3 times what they are among married couples. And women in cohabiting relationships are more likely than married women to suffer physical and sexual abuse. Oh, they always talk about the mean husband that beats up his wife. There are more mean men in cohabiting couples. Far more. Because they have no commitment to the other person. 6% of married couples with children are living in poverty in the United States. 31% of cohabiting couples are living in poverty. 45% of single mothers are living in poverty. Who has a better life? That's decision. Particularly interesting that I like to bring that one out when somebody tells me, we can't afford to get married. I say, we afford to live together. Actually, you can't afford not to get married. You want to put it the other way. When you get married, more people tend to do more successfully. Because you're working for somebody. The reason is very simple. When you have a marriage and you can depend on someone to be there to help you through hard times, it goes better. And it's happier. Take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, starting with verse 9. What profit is there to a worker that from which he had toils? I've seen the task which God has given to the son. Oops, I got three. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either one of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A three-cord strand is not quickly torn apart. Part of marriage is companionship. Part of companionship is that you got somebody to depend on. Yes, in times, there's times when one couple is down, the other side of the couple holds it together. And they go down and the other side holds it up. What's the net result? As a group, they're happier. Or if they get unhappy, they don't stay that way very long. And there's no reliable support when one partner can just walk out the door. So what do we conclude? Fornication is a sin because God said so. And as we looked at it from various standpoints, we see that God does know his creation. And men are getting around to say, you know what? He's right. It does work this way. Secular men are seeing the reasonableness of God's plan. So what about you? Do we question what God says? It's not bad to ask, well, why? That's a good question. And when you find out why and you still drag your feet, sometimes we just got to understand that God tells us no. Okay, we don't do that. Then we can ask why. There's a reason for what God tells us. Every one of his laws are for our good. Always. And this is no exception to the rule. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here who wishes to become a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of a brother on the behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of Philippians.